Today on Enduring Word with David Guzik, pastor of Calvary Chapel, Santa Barbara.
You know, sometimes I think about that. You think of an athlete or something who's a, you know, Olympic athlete and wins the gold medal and achieves all this fame and accomplishment, but they do it all when they're 22 years old. And then you think, what do you do with the rest of your life when the high point of your life has already passed? And you know that it has passed. And here, Solomon must be thinking these thoughts. And of course, this is always a dangerous time in a person's life.
Each and every one of us has some sort of goal or dream within us that we typically find at a younger age. Whether these goals or dreams are great or small, we often spend a fair amount of time pursuing them with everything we've got. But what do we do when we fulfill those goals or dreams early on in our life? In today's message, Pastor David reflects on the accomplishments of young Solomon as King of Israel. In our study, we learn of the dangers that can take place when we seem to think that we've run out of ambition or goals in life. Now, here's Pastor David with today's edition of Enduring Word.
So tonight we're going to consider 1 Kings chapters 9 and 10, much more on the life and the career of Solomon. If you remember, last time we were together in 1 Kings chapter 8, we saw this very remarkable dedication of the temple. It was a very long chapter, some 66 verses long, speaking of when Solomon and the others with him dedicated the temple amidst all those many thousands of animals sacrificed and the answer that the Lord gave him and the glory of the Lord that came upon the place. But whenever you have a big project like that, whenever you have a big job to do, there are really two challenges involved. There's many more than two, but I'll just name two challenges. One is the challenge of doing the project. And then the other challenge is when it's all over. Because when it's all over, you really have to find something else that is productive to do. And that's sort of what we come with here in 1 Kings chapter 9, beginning now at verse 1. And it came to pass when Solomon had finished building the house of the Lord and the king's house, and all Solomon's desire, which he wanted to do, that the Lord appeared to Solomon the second time, as he had appeared to him at Gibeon. And the Lord said to him, I have heard your prayer and your supplication that you have made before me. I have consecrated this house, which you have built, to put my name there forever, and my eyes and my heart will be there perpetually. Now, if you walk before me as your father David walked, in integrity of heart and in uprightness, to do according to all I have commanded you, and if you keep my statutes and my judgments, then I will establish the throne of your kingdom over Israel forever, as I promised David your father, saying, you shall not fail to have a man on the throne of Israel. Now, this happened some 24 years after Solomon came to the throne. The temple and the palace work at Jerusalem were all finished. Now Solomon had to deal with life after completing his greatest accomplishment. You know, sometimes I think about that. You think of an athlete or something who's a, you know, Olympic athlete and wins the gold medal and achieves all this fame and accomplishment, but they do it all when they're 22 years old. And then you think, what do you do with the rest of your life when the high point of your life has already passed? And you know that it is past. And here, Solomon must be thinking these thoughts. And of course, this is always a dangerous time in a person's life. You can think, well, I've done my work. I've finished my job. Now it's not so important. Now it's not so vital what I did. I never forget an experience that I had in a church building project once. Actually, we weren't building a brand new building. We were just renovating and expanding into new space. But it was a lot of work for our church, and I had to put a lot of myself into the job and work and work and work and work. And when it was finally finished, I was so happy, I was so pleased that my attitude was, I don't want to do anything difficult again. And actually, it was a bad attitude because we just sort of started drifting off without much of a vision, without much of a heart to go out and accomplish something. Looking back on it now, I would have done it differently. I would have said, okay, for 1 month, we're not going to do anything. You know, we're not going to plan anything. We're not going to do anything. We're just going to take it easy for 1 month. But then after that, it's going to be, Lord, what do you have for us next? What big thing do we have from you to do next? Well, Solomon was just in this place, but God was very gracious to Solomon. If you notice in verse 2, it says, the Lord appeared to Solomon the second time. Now, God was good enough to give Solomon a special appearance at the beginning of his reign. We saw that way back at 1 Kings chapter 3. Do you remember that whole exchange where God told Solomon, whatever you want, I'll give it to you. But now, God was even better to Solomon to grant him a unique appearance a second time. And I read that, and that gives me great hope. You know, it just makes me think that no matter what wonderful experiences you or I may have had with God in the past, we can have more. God gives us second experiences, and I'd like to believe third experiences and fourth experiences. We can just believe that God has more and more experiences for us. We don't need to be saved all over again, but we do need fresh outpourings of the Spirit of God upon our life. We need new rain to come upon our life. I mean, you wouldn't say to a farmer, well, you had rain 3 years ago. Well, why do you want it again? I mean, we need that continual rain. And so it's good for us to anticipate it and to ask for it. We want that kind of repeated blessing from God. And the great blessing he had is sort of encompassed in this idea in verse 3, where God says, I have heard your prayer. I want you to think about that great prayer that Solomon offered in 1 Kings chapter 8. Remember when we studied it together last time? It was really one of the great prayers of the Bible, one of the longest prayers recorded in the Bible. Well, it doesn't matter how wonderful and artistic and poetic and powerful your prayer sounds. What really matters is if God hears your prayer from heaven. And this is what happened with Solomon. God heard the prayer. God answered the prayer. And the answer was in this. He said, this is in verse 3, I have consecrated the house which you have built to my name there forever. The building was Solomon's work. It was done in the power and in the inspiration of the Lord. But consecrating the building, in other words, making it holy, putting the holy presence of the Lord upon that building, that was only something that God could do. Solomon could build a building, but only God could hallow it. And that's what we have to consider. Man builds, but God makes something holy. God makes something the unique resting place of his Spirit. And so now here's the promise that he makes to him here in verse 4. If you walk before me as your father David walked, in integrity of heart and uprightness, do according to all that I have commanded you, and if you keep all my statutes and my judgments, then I will establish the throne of your kingdom. Now, God's answer to Solomon's prayer had a very significant condition. If Solomon walked before God in obedience and faithfulness, then he could expect blessing upon his reign and the reign of his descendants. But it was a big if. Solomon was commanded to walk in obedience. Now, I don't want you to think that God was expecting something unrealistic of Solomon. God was not demanding perfect obedience from Solomon. Think of this question. Did David walk perfectly before the Lord in his reign? No, of course not. Matter of fact, there was some notorious sin and scandal associated with the reign of David. Nevertheless, that's all God was asking Solomon to do. Walk as your father David walked. Solomon, I'm not expecting you to be perfect. I'm not expecting you to never sin or never make a mistake, but be like your father David. When you do make such a sin, when you do make such a mistake, set it right before me. As a matter of fact, starting here in verse 6, God even warns Solomon. He says, but if you or your sons at all turn from following me and do not keep my commandments and my statutes, which I have set before you, but go and serve other gods and worship them, then I will cut off Israel from the land which I have given them. And this house which I have consecrated for my name, I will cast out of my sight. Israel will be a proverb and a byword among all peoples. And as for this house, which is exalted, everyone who passes by it will be astonished and will hiss and will say, why has the Lord done this to this land and to this house? Then they will answer, because they forsook the Lord their God, who brought their fathers out of the land of Egypt, and have embraced other gods and worshiped them and served them. Therefore, the Lord has brought all this calamity on them. You see, again, there was a positive promise back in verses 1 through 5. The positive promise was, Solomon, if you obey me, if you follow me, if your descendants do this, I'll secure your throne forever, which is a wonderful promise. You don't have to worry about the Egyptians. You don't have to worry about the Assyrians. You don't have to worry about the Babylonians. I will establish your throne forever. But there's a negative side to the promise here in verses 6 through 9. If you don't obey, if you reject me, either you or your descendants, then I will cut off Israel from the land. And I believe it's even a more dramatic promise that he makes there at the end of verse 7, where he says, and this house which I consecrated for my name, I will cast out of my sight. Now, God promised back in chapter 8, I will dwell in this place. I put my glory here. I am pleased with what you did, Solomon. But nobody should take that as some promise from God that he will remain there forever, no matter what the kings or the people of Israel do. God promised to bless the temple and fill it with his glory, but at the same time, he would cast it out of his sight if the kings of Israel forsook the Lord. You know, with such a glorious temple that Solomon built, Israel would be tempted to forsake the God of the temple and make an idol of the temple instead. Here the Lord made them know that he could never bless that error. If you do this, I will cast myself, my presence, out of the temple. And instead, he says, Israel will become a proverb, and everyone who passes by it will be astonished and hiss. It's interesting. This is actually just a continuation of promises that God made to the nation of Israel way back in the days of Moses. An important component of the Old Covenant, what you might call the Old Covenant or the Mosaic Covenant, was the choice that God gave his people. And the choice was essentially this: if you obey me, I will bless you. If you disobey me, I will curse you. And sadly, to some extent, this curse became the history of Israel. Under that Old Covenant, God promised to use Israel to exalt himself among the nations one way or another. If they obeyed him, he would exalt himself by blessing them so much everybody knew it was the Lord. But if they disobeyed him, God would exalt himself by saying, no nation could be so cursed and still survive unless the Lord was with them. I like the way the Living Bible translates 1 Kings chapter 9, verse 7. It says, Israel will become a joke to the nations and an example and proverb of sudden disaster. Well, that's a vivid way of expressing the thought that God gave to Solomon and to all of Israel here. Well, this was a severe warning, and we're almost a little bit worried when we read this warning. We say, gee, God, there must have been some reason why you made such an important warning to Solomon. God obviously knew something that there was in the character of Solomon. By the way, I can't recall. I'm just thinking about it quickly in my mind right now. I can't recall God making such a promise to David. Can you? It's as if God knew something about David that he didn't know about Solomon. He knew that Solomon needed to hear this strong word of warning, whereas David didn't. He knew that David was a man after his own heart, where Solomon needed the threat of punishment to encourage him to do what was right. So the question before us as we come to verse 10 and the rest of the chapter is, will Solomon do right? Well, let's take a look at some of the business affairs of Solomon here in this chapter and in the next. Verse 10. Now it happened at the end of 20 years when Solomon had built the two houses, the house of the Lord and the king's house. Hiram, the king of Tyre, had supplied Solomon with cedar and cypress and gold, as much as he desired, that King Solomon then gave Hiram 20 cities in the land of Galilee. So do you get the feel here? In exchange for all this gold from King Hiram of Lebanon, Solomon gave him some cities. Then Hiram went from Tyre to see the cities which Solomon had given him, but they did not please him. So he said, what kind of cities are these which you've given me, my brother? And he called them the land of Kabul, as they are to this day. Then Hiram sent the king 120 talents of gold, and the implication is as he had previously promised. Now, again, he sent him the wood, he sent him the gold, he sent him the things that he asked for, and what did Solomon give to in exchange for him? And it's interesting, this is an interesting point, how you interpret this. It could be putting this here because it wants you to think that Solomon did a bad thing in giving away some of the land of Israel, which was God's land, right? This was the land by inheritance to the people of Israel. So maybe we're supposed to read this and say, my heavens, Solomon, you fool, you gave away this land. Why did you ever do that? Or it may have another idea. It may have the idea of, oh, Solomon, you're so smart, you tricked Hiram of Tyre. You went into a negotiation with, you say, I'll give you these 20, you know, towns in the Galilee area in exchange for all this gold. And when Hiram went and saw the towns, he said, these are the lousiest little villages I've ever seen in my life. Who wants these? That seems to be the attitude that you get from Hiram in this. The idea may be that Solomon was such a shrewd businessman that he got the better of Hiram in these arrangements. And so, if you want an example to see that Hiram thought this was a bad deal, he named the place Kabul. Do you know what that means? Literally in the Hebrew, good for nothing. He looked at it and goes, these are good for nothing. So I have to be honest with you. I don't know exactly how to take this passage. I don't know if you're supposed to think, oh, Solomon, you're bad for giving away the land of Israel, or Solomon, you're so smart. But smart, but might I say sneaky smart, you know, deceptively smart. Not necessarily the kind of smart that the people of God should be. Verse 15. And this is the reason for the labor force which King Solomon raised, to build the house of the Lord for his own house, the Millo, the wall of Jerusalem, Hazor, Megiddo, and Gezer. Pharaoh, king of Egypt, had gone up and taken Gezer and burned it with fire, and had killed the Canaanites who dwelt in the city, and had given it as a dowry to his daughter, Solomon's wife. And Solomon built Gezer, lower Beth Horon, Baalath, and Taldmor in the wilderness in the land of Judah, all the storage cities that Solomon had, cities for his chariots and cities for his cavalry, and whatever Solomon desired to build in Jerusalem, in Lebanon, and in all the land of his dominion. All the people who were left of the Amorites, Hittites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites, who were not of the children of Israel, that is, their descendants who were left in the land after them, whom the people of Israel had not been able to destroy completely, from these Solomon raised forced labor, as it is to this day. But of the children of Israel, Solomon made no forced laborers, because they were men of war and his servants, his officers, his captains, commanders of his chariots, and his cavalry. Others were chiefs of the officials who were over Solomon's work, 550 who ruled over the people who did the work. But Pharaoh's daughter came up from the city of David to her house, which Solomon had built for her. Then he built the Millo. Now, here it tells you why Solomon needed this labor force. He had so many massive building projects that he needed this labor group to help him in the job. And so it describes all these different places that he built. But probably more interesting to us was the slave labor that he raised in order to do this. Apparently, this was another compromise on the part of Solomon. God strictly commanded that those who were left from these tribes be driven out of the land, not that they be used as slave laborers in Israel. Solomon didn't make the Israelites slave laborers, and that's good. But what he did is he used them to oversee the Canaanite laborers, the slave laborers, which God never said make the Canaanite slave laborers. He said drive them out of the land. So this is another example. We look at this and Solomon goes, not so good. So do you see the progression we have here? Solomon builds the temple. It's all great. It's all glorious. God makes him this promise with a great warning. And then we have the story about Solomon and Hiram. Not so good. Now Solomon, the Canaanite slave laborers, not so good. Well, let's take a look here. Verse 25. Now, three times a year, Solomon offered burnt offerings and peace offerings on the altar which he had built for the Lord, and burned incense with them on the altar that was before the Lord. So he finished the temple. King Solomon also built a fleet of ships at Ezion-Geber, which is near Eloth on the shores of the Red Sea in the land of Edom. Then Hiram sent his servants with the fleet, seamen who knew the sea, to work with the servants of Solomon. And they went to Ophir and acquired 420 talents of gold from there and brought it to King Solomon. Now, it says that three times a year, Solomon offered burnt offerings and peace offerings on the altar which he had built for the Lord. It's possible that this is another negative comment about Solomon, because it's possible that it means that Solomon himself personally did this, and that would be a violation because kings were not supposed to offer sacrifice, only priests. However, I should say that it is also entirely possible that Solomon simply did this through a priest. Many times in the Old Testament, when it says that a king offered such and such sacrifice, it really means that he did it through an appropriate priest. So we can't say for certain if this is a negative comment about Solomon or not. But he did show great enterprise, great industriousness. The idea is that he went to Ophir and got gold from there. You know, we don't know exactly where the land of Ophir is. There are several different suggestions, but nobody knows exactly. The idea from this is to give you the impression that Solomon is a smart, enterprising businessman. Yeah, if you think about Solomon, he would be the man on the cover of one of these business magazines. You know, he's smart. Now, David would have never made the cover of a business magazine. You know, I don't know what magazine David would have been on the cover of. But he wouldn't have made the cover of a business magazine. But people look at, you know, Solomon would be the guy writing the book on how to be successful in management. And everybody would want to know that from Solomon. David would be writing worship songs of love to the Lord. Do you see the contrast here? We kind of see it again and again. Sharp, shrewd businessman, but not much of a heart for the Lord. Now, chapter 10, verse 1. Now, when the queen of Sheba heard of the fame of Solomon concerning the name of the Lord, she came to test him with hard questions. Now, this queen was from the land of Sheba. It's also known as Sabaea. It's where modern-day Yemen is today, southern Arabia. We know from geography that this was a wealthy kingdom. It had gold. It had spices. It had precious woods. History also tells us that in this region, the land was ruled by not only kings, but also by queens. Now, this was a long trip for the Queen of Sheba to come to Jerusalem. It was something like 1,500 miles or 2,400 kilometers. And she probably came there as part of a trade delegation. You know, let's go and see if we can do business with this man Solomon and his kingdom. But there's no doubt that she was very highly motivated to see Solomon and his kingdom because she came from such a great distance. And so when she came, having heard of the fame of Solomon concerning the name of the Lord, it says that she came to test him. Now, this is an important visit. The Queen of Sheba comes to Solomon when he's at his peak. Everything is at the top here in chapter 10. The great prosperity and splendor and wisdom of Solomon's kingdom were internationally famous. This is sort of a fulfillment of what God intended all along, that the nations would be drawn to a blessed Israel. But I need to, you know, sort of push the mental pause button right here. Let's think about this. Yes, Israel was blessed. But I need to ask you a question. Were they more blessed for Solomon's sake or for David's sake? I suggest to you that Israel was more blessed for David's sake than they were for Solomon's sake. Anyway, it's an interesting thought. You can take it or leave it as you will, but let's continue on here. Verse 2. She came to Jerusalem with a very great retinue, with camels that bore spices, very much gold and precious stones. And when she came to Solomon, she spoke with him about all that was in her heart. So Solomon answered all her questions. There was nothing so difficult for the king that he could not explain it to her.
Thanks so much for joining us today for this edition of Enduring Word Radio. Over the years in Christian media, we've seen all sorts of misrepresentations about supporting ministries. Everything from give your last dollar to if you don't give, God's work won't be done. These sorts of manipulations are not biblical, and they do not represent God's heart for giving. Here at Enduring Word Radio, we want to run fast and far from these sorts of misrepresentations. That said, it's also important for us to be faithful to share with you the ongoing financial needs that we do have. Enduring Word Radio is heard all over the United States. The program that you listen to today was professionally produced, and purchasing time on some radio stations comes with a cost. So we want to be sure to at least inform you and ask that you seek the Lord about supporting Enduring Word Radio. there's a secure option to give right on the homepage of enduringword.com. You can give a one-time gift or partner with us on a monthly basis. Again, that secure option to support Enduring Word Radio is available at enduringword.com. In closing, our thoughts on ministry is where God guides, God provides. God is faithful, and He will continue to provide for Enduring Word Radio. Again, thanks so much for joining us today for Enduring Word Radio with Pastor David Guzik. It's our hope and prayer that today's message has been a blessing to you. Until next time, may God bless you and keep you.